On this episode, Schooling and Learning Experience in isiZulu, I am joined by Senzo Hlophe, who currently works at DG Mary Trust as an innovation director for the program called All Children on Track by Grade 4. I invited Senzo for this conversation because he once narrated an experience to me of him being taught in isiZulu. And I think that it was important for us to sort of draw a lived experience from someone who has gone through schooling, primary schooling, high school, and also university, and currently who's working, particularly in the education sector, to sort of share his experience of how the journey has been, what challenges he has experienced, and you will hear from him now in this conversation. Hi Senzo.
Hi, Yulisa.
How are you?
Thank you for having me.
How are you?
Good,
I'm good, thank you. So I thought I should have this conversation with you because I met you at a conference and then you shared your experience about being taught in isiZulu. Also, I think I just want to learn more about how that experience was because most of us, especially Black children, do not get the privilege of being taught in our home languages. But also there's this understanding of just because you did isiZulu, everything was taught in isiZulu. There's that assumption. And then sometimes there's a practice where children do their home languages, let's say in isiZulu again, but then you'll find that their subjects are being taught in a different language, which is English. So which school did you go to where you were taught in isiZulu?
Cool. So my story is a long-winded one, but So I was born and raised in a small town called Potchefstroom in KZN, KwaZulu-Natal. Potchefstroom is in the south coast. I went to a primary school called Siphakamile Combined Primary School. That's where I did my grade one, which was my first experience of school. I did not get pre-schooling education all the way to grade seven. And then I did my high school in also a high school not so far from my primary school, which is called the Nobamba High School.
Okay. Nobamba High School.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then during this period, were you taught in isiZulu in both schools or was it different in both schools, the experience?
So, I mean, maybe to preface the learning in Zulu is... So the South African education policy allows school to teach learners, at least for the first three grades, grade one, grade two, and grade three, in mother tongue.
Mm-hmm.
So mother tongue in South African context is we have 11 official languages. What that means, you'll expect that at least for grade one or even pre-grade one, but all the way to grade three, people are learning in their home languages. But this is not a policy that is being enforced. Also because probably a significant number of parents will prefer that their children really get started with English because of the economic benefits associated with the English language. But in my context is, I think there were a couple of factors that led to me learning in isiZulu. One was the fact I was in a rural school where even teachers weren't that fluent in English. And pretty much everyone, my teachers, my home, my community, everyone spoke isiZulu. None of us had an interaction with an English-speaking person. Probably my first time interacting with an English-speaking person was almost in matric. But it means a benefit to learn the language and I would never speak to anyone except probably what I would see on Generations, which I never understood, or on TV for that matter. So the learning was mostly done isiZulu because of those couple of factors. And it was not an official policy.
Yes.
Where in most cases, what I observed from grade 4-5, for example, was a bilingual classes.
Okay.
Where literally both English and Zulu were equally used. So textbooks were in English, notes were in English, but teachers facilitated learning in isiZulu. They would use the Zulu culture, the Zulu knowledge to explain scientific terms, to explain how things work. So that was really for us easy because we did not know any better. That's what we knew education to be. Equally, that was useful because when I went back home, I will explain some of the things in Venek, in my language, to my grandparents, and they will understand it and then they will contribute to my education. And this was similarly experienced when I went to high school. In high school, probably English became more dominant. I would say maybe a 70-30 ratio. Uh-huh. The Zulu class was still my favorite class subject, my Zulu language. Yes. My teachers were amazing in high school. All the other subjects, they were a mix of English and Zulu in how they were facilitated, even math. But that was also not by law or policy. Yes. It was just my circumstance again in terms of where I was raised. But what that made for me, and I think for many of my peers, was easy grasping of the concept. Obviously and naturally, we struggled when it came to national assessment because those were done only in English.
In detail. But before we get to that part, Senzo, I want to sort of, like you mentioned that the teachers as well were in the context of isiZulu, right? It's a Zulu community. And also they tried to make the experience of learning very relative in terms of this is your environment. So the examples that were always provided, chances are that they were applicable to your context. And I think that helped you in many ways and your classmates to understand what the concepts are. But do you think, like now that you're an adult and you are reflecting and have observed that maybe the teachers experienced difficulty in narrating those experiences in Sizulu or teaching or translating, I don't know, or maybe it was more helpful? Because the argument is always that there's no scientific language for these things. Like I always mention photosynthesis because I don't know what photosynthesis is in isiXhosa. So there's always that argument that there's no scientific language, therefore we can't teach our children in their home languages. Only English and Afrikaans have this language, for example. So do you think teachers struggled?
I think it was a struggle. There was a degree of struggle, but I don't think the struggle was caused so much by explaining things in Zulu. I think the struggle was the fact that even the teachers themselves, they were not confident in their English articulation. Because, again, they themselves, English was not the language they probably spoke on a daily basis. And then the audience they were teaching was speaking in isiZulu. So I think to my understanding and to me empathizing with them, I think probably they felt even more comfortable themselves if they went Venek, because that's when they could explain with confidence. Yes. Using things that are familiar to us and examples that are familiar to us. I think probably isiZulu was an escape for all of us to a space of comfort that all of us are familiar with. English was more of a difficulty because they will say words like photosynthesis and all that. Like, we have no clue what you're saying. Yes. Up until she will explain that in vernacular terms of the process of what photosynthesis is. And then you're like, when this happens, when that happens, I'm like, then that's photosynthesis. I'm like, perfect. But that explanation, those examples will be done in Zulu. And to both our benefits, so to my benefit as a learner and to the teacher was a sense of confidence. I think to me, and I always say this jokefully to my friends, that having learned so much in Zulu built my own self-confidence.
Yes.
And self-assurance in who I am and what I ought to be in society. So I think that from that scope, it really built that for me, cemented that to me, the belief that I am me, probably the first time I started questioning myself and my abilities was when I went to university. When, of course, everything was done in the Queen's language.
Yeah, it's just the Queen's language. Oh, Senzo. But then, wait, Senzo, before we also get to the university part, right? You are being taught in isiZulu, and isiZulu is the home language. What is the first additional language? Because there has to be a first additional language.
So the first additional language is English. So that was the first additional language. But even that, I remember very well even in high school, our English teachers, you will read like long form novels and stuff, Macbeth and all the stuff. You will read all of these things. The teachers went to an extent of translating for us. Some of the words and some of, and then sometimes we will play a game of, I think this was part of us transitioning from Zulu to English and us developing some level of confidence in English. Teachers would be like, go and pick the most 10 difficult words you can find in this book. And if you can go and find explanations for them in English, come and explain to us in Zulu. We earn points for that. So we learned English more as a game, but actually, I think there was a nice transitioning to English in a way that did not make us feel stupid. It was acknowledging that none of us are familiar with the language. Let's work as a collective to learn the language.
Yeah, no, I like that approach as well. And then was there no confusion between, because also that's the other argument against a multilingual approach is that there's code switching and then it creates a lot of confusion. So you'll be in a classroom and then you are taught in isiZulu and then the teacher goes back into English and then goes back into isiZulu. There's a lot of argument about that being the problem. I don't know whether that argument is justified per se, because also I think if you're code switching to help a learner, it's not problematic. But I think when you code switching in the context and the language that children don't understand, I think then it causes confusion. Because even in my experience at home, when I explain things to my child, there's a lot of back and forth between the home language and English. And sometimes I have to explain some concepts. The example provided it in isiXhosa so that he remembers it and it stays. And I think he can then be able to translate it. But when did you experience a lot of challenges between the code switching? Because also you when you have to write a test, you go back and then you have to translate it in your in English basically.
That was a challenge because as much as I know, so for example, it took forever. So and this is something that I probably been till now, I still experience it. I still do a lot of translating in my mind. Someone might ask a question in English. In my earlier years of transitioning to fully speaking English, was first translating that question into Zulu, then developing my answer in Zulu, then translating that Zulu answer into English, then writing that answer in English. So you can imagine the amount of time it's going to take me for each and every question I have to answer, compared to an English speaker who can just easily read an English question and answer in English. So I would take forever. So in most of my test is, in fact, I experienced this in high school when it was done in English, equally at university, was I never got to finish my assessment that's done in English because I was doing that code switching. But I don't, I think to me, that is not a disadvantage at all. And because one of the benefits of learning in your home language is one, it builds the self-confidence, but two, it bridges the gap between the home and the school. In fact, COVID-19 even showed us this, that homes were not equipped to facilitate any form of learning in the home because learning was done in a school, in a center, alienated from the home, done in a specific culture and practice that is not practiced in the home. As a consequence, even I now, as a graduate of the University of Cape Town, I can speak English. I was useless to my cousins to facilitate anything because of the difference in language in terms of what they're learning in their school. Whereas if it's done in home language, it's easy then to come and reinforce that at the home and parents feel empowered. So the second part is building the bridge between the school and the home. The third part about code switching is there are studies that have been done by Praisa at UCT, by Stephen Taylor and others, and I think Nick Spall in the South African context and international studies. They have shown that children who grew up multilingual, is they growing up to adults, they demonstrate much better communicative skills and adaptive skills, which are the things that today we speak about when we're talking about the first grade professionals. They depict much better confidence and adaptability and all of those nice things that we speak about now, because they were, that code switching was hammered in them at a much earlier grade. So it's nothing new to them. They are more culturally aware because they're aware of many contexts and languages. So to me, I think to embrace and celebrate and practice multilingualism enables us to learn about other cultures and about others while not losing ourselves in
the
process.
Yeah. No, that may, that is actually true. And I think also, like, what comes up a lot, because I've recorded two podcasts already regarding languages, but what is coming up a lot is there's a confidence that language, being taught in your home language, being able to articulate yourself in your home language, brings a lot of confidence. And I think when you have that confidence, it's easy for you then to approach life itself, because you stand tall, you don't bow down to nonsense, because you can't, you really know where you stand, you're sure of yourself, you can assert yourself as well. So there was this, also there was this story that you told me, which is the one that you started and I want us to get back to. So you guys wrote these national assessments. What happened during that period?
So I'm not sure if I'm putting some of my teachers at risk here, but to their credit and benefit, I am grateful to their creativity and ingenuity in how they facilitated learning for me and for many of my peers. So one of the things that happened, I think, in my grade 10 up, was we will get this national assessment. They will come in English. They will begin questions with things such as critically discuss, critically analyze. And of course, these prefixed to these questions to us, threw us off our understanding of anything they were talking about. So what teachers will do to is, and the paper will be set with a specified time period to finish the assessment. So what teachers did for us was translating those questions. And reminding us what we were asking. So that's one of the things they helped us with. But of course, this might be questionable, but they never gave us answers, but they would help translate the questions.
Yeah.
So for example, a question will be, in this line, let's say an English paper, someone says A, B, and C. What does this mean in relation to something you might have learned elsewhere? I'm like, I don't know what these English words are. The teacher will come and explain and translate them in Zulu. So that was one thing that happened in my experience of learning in English. Of course, this was not available in matric. And as a consequence, we began then to slightly shift as part of preparing for exams. We will learn in English in terms of repeating past papers to familiarize ourselves with how questions are structured. But in most cases, the most radical thing they did was translating the questions.
And then didn't the Department of Basic Education visit you guys?
So that was also, so we didn't get them all the time. So one of the set, but also a benefit of being in a rural, remote, far-flung school is that you don't get a lot of those visitors. You don't get a lot of them. And when you do, you can see them coming from afar with their big cars causing dust heading to your school. So we knew when they were coming. And, of course, we would be in order. So I think in matric, is there were instances where we would not have an external examiner in our classroom, teachers will still help explain in isiZulu some of the questions. But of course, in the presence of these external officials who were there to enforce learning in English in the way that the curriculum has been set, we did not have that benefit. So as a consequence, we had to write in English and fumble our way through that experience and hope for the best.
Yeah, and then Senzo, apart from the confidence that being taught in your home language brings, what do you think was the most helpful attribute in being taught in your home language? And do you consider this beneficial today?
To be honest, I think if I didn't learn much in my language, I don't think I'd be here. that's it's such a disjunction between where I am now in terms of my professional development, my academic career, and my social standing and all of that. But I don't think I'll be here because there's so much that happened during that time of being, because we do not have anything better. So the better we had was what we got. And if we had received what we had in broken English from our teachers transmitted to us, we would have lost so much.
Yeah.
I gained more from just learning in the way that all of us were comfortable in.
Yeah.
Because then when I had to learn in English, because the concepts were already familiar to me in my language, the only challenge I honestly had was just the amount of time it took to develop my responses in English. But the concepts were there. You could ask me, I will tell you. And so, because that was literally the concept all the way, I had them. So that made life easier for me all the way to university. And if those concepts were lost because of broken English and broken communication from the teacher to us,
yeah,
probably I would have learned much, a fragment of what I was supposed to learn during my basic education years.
Yeah, no, that's actually true. And then the transition, you go to UCT from this rural town, small town called Port Shepstone. I'm sure you travel by bus. Am I right?
That's
pretty Yes. And then so you start seeing a different world. You are in the city. You are just at the foot of Table Mountain. What happens to Usenzo? Like, how does he experience university now? The medium of instruction is completely in English. Do you get assistance? Because I know some universities do have those centers where they assist students. What was the transition and how did it look like?
That's a podcast on its own. But really, it starts back in my matric, actually. Mm. In my matric, I had an amazing history teacher, Mrs. Mkize. Again, when we received the applications to apply to universities, so I received application forms from University of Pretoria, from, they were in Afrikaans. That's something to mention. That's okay. The applications I received from University of Pretoria in Afrikaans. I received application form from UCT. I received application forms from Stellenbosch. They were in Afrikaans. So naturally, both my teachers and myself were like, if they're in Afrikaans and even the prospectors have these Afrikaans people, there was no way of applying.
Yeah.
I knew in matric that I wanted to go far away from KZN, where everyone was going.
So UKZN was not going to be an option for you.
Exactly. So UKZN, DUT were out of the question for me. So UCT, I remember, went to an open day, and no one was going to queue on the UCT stall in Kamalake College. No one was queuing on the UCT stall because pretty much UCT was like, it can't get. There's no way. Like, no one except kids who went to fluent high schools in Port Shepstone, like your Port Shepstone High Schools, your Malbec Secondary School, and the Wakes. November kid, never. In fact, when we got the prospectus, our high school has not even been on the ECT named of high schools to
that
high school. I had to do other, then at my high school, and that's on its own. Like, my teachers and everyone was like, said there's no way. But what was powerful about that for me was, again, UCT asked these long-form questions. Why do you want to start at UCT? Like, there, when I get a degree and get a job, but not enough, right? And why do you want to study in Cape Town? So all of those questions, and then as much as I understood the questions and my teacher explained to me to translate again these questions, I had an answer, but my answer was in Zulu. So what we did with a group of my friends was writing these answers in Zulu and attempt our responses in English. And then we submitted them like assignments to our teachers in LO and the one of history to then review our English attempts to respond to this question. And then they made edits. So before we could submit a form, I submitted my form to UCT. My teachers would have made an edit to my form to make sure that my English did not become the reason UCT won't take me in.
Mm.
So that was the first attempt. So when UCT, when I made it to UCT, pretty much credit to my teachers who did the English things to my form, because without them, UCT would have thrown my form out of their consideration. Right, I took a bus. The first experience of that bus was, in fact, that person became a good friend of mine, was on this bus moves from Durban to Port Shepstone, the second stop. There were already guys who were going to UCT in that bus. I could hear when they were talking in the bus. They were all excited like I was. But unlike me, they were fluent in the English language, I tell you. And obviously, I could not talk to them because they're only speaking in English, but they were Zulu. And I was like, is this what's going to be my life? So that's kind of like, ouch, this sucks. Made it to UCT naturally, like most people do. You go towards people that are most familiar to you. So somehow I managed to find Zulu speakers. I managed to find Zulu speakers who too were dealing with this complexity of everything being done in English. And we kind of built that kind of a friendship support group, if you will. And we would laugh at each other. And I was in the humanities, which didn't help, because humanities, we write 24/7, 365, long essays, 300 words. In high school, 300 words, we had an entire year to write. In UCT, you only had a week to write, and yet we chuck those out every week. So getting to UCT was difficult. I almost got excluded in the first year, and largely because I could not get the content, only because I could not understand English, and how things are done, like the English construction of sentences and all of that, the idea of writing second person. So all of those things became new to me. Unfortunately, I did not benefit from those classes that taught people computers and math and English and all of that. So I was kind of thrown in the mix to kind of find my way out of that process. But unfortunately, I managed to make it. I have no clue how, but I managed. But this was certainly the most difficult period of my time. But that being said, I think my English is not that bad, because I had that foundation of understanding concepts in my home language. I was able to navigate the space too.
And then, sorry to put you on the spot again, like, because I'm thinking now, you find your community again at UCT. Don't you also think that finding that community might have excluded you from learning about other cultures and other languages in that same space? Because there are Tswana people, there are Sotho people who are also in that UCT community. But because you lean towards your likeness, did it not exclude you much from other different cultures, like, and languages?
It did. I won't lie to you, it did. At least in my first year, it did. Like, in my first year, I didn't speak, or I was not friends with anyone who did not speak my language. Even my tutors, I picked them by their surnames and names. I was deliberate. My lecturers, if I had an option, I'll go to the one who has a vernacular surname. Surprised to me, they were also teaching in English. And I'm like, what? So it did. It did alienate me. But I think it's because of that support group transition I had in first year, we kind of worked together. Like, we all were like, we want to learn this language, we want to do better. And come second year, my group of friends was more diverse than my first year. And in fact, I realized there were a couple of people who too were struggling with English. So I'm talking about people who came from China, Chinese descent, people who spoke Mandarin, who too were struggling with English. And to us, that was a relief. We had African speakers who went, people who were raised speaking Afrikaans, went to African schools, and they had to come and learn in English. And I'm like, even white people can speak English. This is good. And then we had people who thought they spoke English, but their English was the English I evaded when I was talking Zulu. It was a broken English. Then they realized, actually, UK English is up there. They were doing something even below South African English. So we realized that actually all of us, even those who spoke English, they were struggling to write, articulate themselves in essays. Then we realized actually this English thing was a surprise to probably A huge number of us than I thought. I thought it was just a Zulu sense of problem, but then realized other cultures too, they experience the same thing. And that kind of builds confidence in me and the sense of comfort that I'm not stupid, I'm not dumb. This is shared across many others.
Yeah. Mm. And then you are done now with UCT. You start looking for a job. And then professionally, does it affect you in any way, or do you feel like it brings again more confidence that you can maybe be more reachable and people can contact and communicate with you because then they are comfortable to speak to you in their home language? Do you feel like in your professional setting now, it is beneficial that you went through that journey?
So that's a funny one. Not so long ago, I think probably a month or so ago, I was participating in a COVID-19 response for a radio show. It's called Sikabai COVID. It basically brings awareness around how to prevent and mitigate the risk of being infected with COVID-19.
Yeah.
And of course, I did this with the organization I work for. And naturally, I'm the only one. Again, when I joined the company, I was the only Zulu speaker, the only black guy. So all things Venek were kind of sent in my direction when it came to work communication, even if I could not speak Sotho or Tswana on Ndebele, but I was seen as a black guy, so I should know something. A month ago, I did a radio interview in Zulu. I was recording a radio interview, and someone said that I don't sound Zulu.
Oh.
At all. So that's just a sideline joke to your question about my professional thing. So I question my Zulu-ness now since then. But yes, you're right. When it comes to work, it felt but slightly better, but I still felt like the transition I had from high school to university, I somehow experienced it when I transitioned from university to the world of work, because I had mastered university language and language use in terms of English. Mm. But certainly when you move to a professional setting, the language changes again.
Yeah.
There are ways that like in universities, I learned to put, I guess, though in every sentence I would say, I'm like, how can you though, like all of that. I'm like, okay, that's how it's done. You get to work in your language, you need to be professional. Again, it's a different English. Professional English compared to conversational English and writing English compared to spoken English are slightly different. So I too, when I go to work, and then I had to learn corporate language, which was also conducted in English, but corporate language in a sense that there are words that are used to mean something within this family that I'm joining.
Yes.
So I had to learn all of that. Again, coming from the background of having been taught most of my life in Zulu, I was just barely mastering English to now realizing there's another tier of language I had to learn. It was a struggle. So I remember in my first presentation I had to do at work, it was a mess. I literally almost cried. I probably cried after, because I was like, I must be the most incompetent, useless person to be ever recruited. In fact, on what basis did these people recruit me? Because I literally, English went out the window when I had to present standing in front of my colleagues. And I just stomped out and I ran out and I was embarrassed ever since. And then benefits to me, my colleagues were very supportful.
Yeah.
And probably it was not only just a language issue that I was facing at the time, but also just the confidence of standing in front of people and talking.
Yes.
And these people, unlike my touch groups, which are all vernacular speaking people, was now for the first time I was in a room full of white Indians and colored people, and I had to articulate in their language. That frightened me for a second.
Mm.
But luckily, my colleagues are amazing, they're understanding. So we kind of worked that fright together, and I think I'm relatively okay now.
No, but I'm glad also you arrived in a safe space, because
exactly.
it says a lot about the people that you work with as well, because we tend to laugh a lot when someone does not articulate themselves well in English, but forgetting that it's not necessarily their mother tongue. There's definitely room for improvement, but it does not mean that they don't understand what it is that they're talking about. Or sometimes it's difficult to just make your point because you are translating in your head, but it does not mean again that you can't. Yeah, you don't know as well. And then I like also that you refer to your colleagues because you guys do a lot of good work. You're currently an innovation director, right, at
Yes.
DG Mary Trust. What do you guys do, and what do you specifically do?
So a brief background is the DG Murray Trust exists out of an endowment from Murray of Murray and Robert Construction Company. So the trust is not affiliated with the company, it's affiliated with the co-founder of the company, who when he passed on decades ago, I don't think he had children. He then bestowed all his endowment into a creation of a trust that will do benevolent work in the Cape region because Murray and Robert Construction Company was a Cape company. So the idea was it was going to support the communities where it worked first and where they worked back in the days. So to date, we are there is no family involved of the Murray and Roberts family in our running of the organization. So we position ourselves as an independent private foundation that is committed to realizing South Africa's potential. And the only way we best know how to go about doing that in investing in human capital development, which speaks nicely to the kind of conversation we're talking about. There's many types of development the country can take, whether they're taking the economic development routes or physical infrastructure development. We believe in empowering and developing people to be capable to be self-sufficient. Because when a person is self-sufficient, they're able to uplift others, and then it becomes a ripple effect kind of a phenomenon. So that's what we do. And in terms of my work, so because we're doing the human capital development, think of it as a human life phased approach. It starts from conception all the way to a young to adult person. I am responsible to oversee the first 10 years of life in terms of development. So I head up what will be known in layman's terms an early childhood development strategy, which we call keeping all children on track by grade four. What we normally do and what we are known for in terms of the organization is grant making. We make grants that support NGOs that work in that space. But that's just one part of it. The other part of what we do is working closely with the state government to help them do better in terms of what they should be and doing in terms of their work. So we work closely with government to help develop policies, to help implement policies, to help drive change management processes that will improve benefits for the people of South Africa. Because we realize that our foundation is small, our funding is small. It's literally a drop in an ocean in contrast to the fiscus that the state has. So we try and leverage the drop that we have to work closely with a much bigger pool of money like that of the state, but also working with other funders to drive a common agenda of realizing South Africa's potential.
And
So that's
then,
what we do with,
yeah.
that's what we do in the main. That's what we do in the main.
Okay, and then Senzo, like with keeping children on track by grade four, right? Like what has been like something that you have noticed or a shocker or one of the main challenges that just keeps you up at night just thinking about it, but like, you know what, if I don't help assist in this way, then these children or many children will drop out of the system because we missed this part. Like, what has been? Is it nutrition? Is it education? Is it language? Is it psychosocial support? What has been that one thing for you that touches you all the time?
I mean, not to punt on this conversation, but I think the question of language is very important. I'm going to tell you why and how. And then the second part, which I think is important to me, you're right, is nutrition. But when it comes to the education aspect of it, it's really setting the foundation so that children are set to thrive in life much further. So,
Think it is quite important to keep children on track by grade four. I think we all that phase is called the foundation phase for a reason, and that if a lot of our children are not on track, is we risk losing them in the system. So the one immediate loss is that them falling behind. It means they are constantly having to play a role of catching up in that education system, so they're constantly falling behind. And the worst thing that can happen to children who are not on track is that they are at a higher risk of dropping out in the schooling system. And of course, we know the effects of children dropping out of school and what that it means for their own personal growth and development and economic participation. It's a challenge that this country cannot afford at this moment. So, and for children to be on track, and the very basic is to make sure children are confident and able to learn and comprehend in their home language, and that they're able to do the basic mathematics or early numeracy that they should have had in place. But a lot of children, by the time they get to grade four, they don't have this foundation set. So that's why I think for me it's a good idea to make sure that we define actually what it means to be on track by grade four. A lot of studies have shown that children start being off track just in and around before entering the intermediate phase. So if we can do something to prevent them being falling off track at that level, is they are likely to stay in the schooling system all the way to completion. So that's why I think for me it's important to keep children on track by grade four.
It is really shocking that we I think sometimes we live in a bubble as South Africans, depending on where you are settled, because what's coming up across is that I think, or let me put it like this, I think we do not know how many children actually exit the system for us to see that many people don't ever make it, or they don't ever pass through it, right? Many of South African children exit the system because of circumstance, because of challenges. And for example, even when you mentioned the fact that you were the first person to list the name of your school at UCT because you decided to go against the grain, right? So I want to, I think, well, let me put it like this. In closing, would you kindly share what you wish we could do better regarding particularly the topic that we spoke about today? Oh, and thank you for your time, Senzo. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
I think on the question of what could be done around languages, I think the very simplest radical thing that this country can do is making sure that at least the books available match the population demographics of the country by language. So it's quite unfortunate at the moment that books available are skewed towards English, while majority of the languages like Sotho, Pedi, Venda, Zulu, Xhosa, Tsonga continue to have far less books available across population ages of the population, but even more so for children. So more and more children, in fact, not too long ago I saw stats that said 7% of children have more than 10 books in their home. So that's quite a damning figure to have for a country that is seeking to invest in its children and in its population development. And I think for me, the significant thing we can do to really improve language development in the country is making sure we have appropriate books available for children, appropriate by age, appropriate by language. And that requires bold investment by private and public sector to really drive the agenda of making books available. And making books available, not just physical books in terms of print, we can use different transmission to make books available. So yes, I'm a strong believer in paper books being made available, but we should also be thinking around the zero rating online content that is already available so that the users do not bear the cost of mobile data when trying to access online reading materials. You should be thinking around using mass media broadcasting mediums, for example, to make reading materials available. And all of this would require a strong partnership between the state and the private sector to make this happen. Mobile network operators, for example, to zero-rate platforms like that of Nalibali, of Funza, of WordWorks, of Shine, and you name it. But also for the distributors of the companies that play a massive role in logistics, supply chain and distribution, to really think around how do we leverage that network to distribute and make sure that all children in every village, they have access to books. And I think that's the first start. We can't say we want the country that reads if the country does not have access to reading material. And I think that the most radical thing we can do is making books available to every household and making sure those books are appropriate. And appropriate, it means if I'm 7 and I speak Zulu, I must have Zulu 7-year-old type books in my home that are available for me to read. And that will begin to cultivate the culture of reading as and when one progresses. And I think that's the most radical thing we can do.